Russian airstrikes near Ukraine's border with Poland heightens fears of the conflict spilling over to NATO allies. Another oil price hike awaits motorists this week, with diesel expected to go up by as much as 12 pesos per liter. The Philippines approves the use of Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine for children 6 and above. And we pay tribute to the women on the front lines of this pandemic this International Women's Month as we chat with Dr. Maricar Limpin, president of the Philippine College of Physicians. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Ukraine and Russia believe progress is made in the ongoing peace talks. That's despite Moscow's latest airstrike sparking fears of the conflict spilling over to neighboring countries. Here's the full story.
A Russian airstrike hit a large military base in western Ukraine on Sunday, extending the conflict into new areas. At least 35 people died and more than 130 were wounded, according to regional governor Maxim Kozitsky. He said Russian planes fired around 30 rockets at the facility, but some were intercepted. Reuters was unable to verify his statement. Britain said the incident at the extensive Yavoriv base, just 15 miles from the border with NATO member Poland, marked a significant escalation. It also heightens fears that Russia's invasion of Ukraine could spill over into neighboring NATO member states. US President Joe Biden has previously said NATO would defend every inch of its territory if that happened. Intensive Russian attacks have been reported around the country. In Chernihiv, around 100 miles northeast of Kyiv, firefighters rescued residents from a burning building after heavy shelling, verified video from Ukraine's emergency services showed. Moscow denies targeting civilians. Ukraine also reported renewed airstrikes on an airport in the west and attacks on the southern town of Mykolaiv, where officials said 9 people were killed. Ukraine's human rights monitor said Russia used phosphorus bombs in an overnight attack on the town of Popasna in the eastern Luhansk region. Reuters has not verified those reports. In the southern port city of Kherson, more than 400 people were detained by Russia's National Guard as they protested against Russia's occupation of the area, according to Ukraine's military high command. Despite the violence, both Russia and Ukraine said they thought progress could be made at peace talks, 18 days after Moscow launched what it calls a special military operation. A Ukrainian delegate said Russia was beginning to, quote, talk constructively, and results were possible in a matter of days. A Russian delegate also said they'd made significant progress.
A message of hope and defiance from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on day 18 of the Russian invasion. He says despite the airstrike in western Ukraine and the evacuation of thousands of civilians from across the country, Ukraine will win because his people know how to unite. Zelensky repeated his call to NATO to implement a no-fly zone over Ukraine. He also expressed optimism in the ongoing peace talks and a possible meeting with Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin.
I also visited checkpoints today. I didn't want it to be very public, just to support our guys. They are courageous men, cheerful guys, who defend Kyiv and know that we will win. You can feel it. We will win thanks to our unique ability to unite our people. We can always care for our people, ours by spirit, ours in their hearts, in their sincerity. Now about negotiations with the Russian Federation, our delegation has a clear task to do everything possible to ensure that the meeting of the presidents takes place, a meeting that I'm sure people expect. Obviously, this is a complicated situation. It's a difficult path, but a necessary path. And our goal is to ensure that Ukraine gets the necessary result from this struggle, from this difficult negotiation work. It is necessary for us, for peace and for security.
An American journalist is killed while another is wounded after being fired upon by Russian forces in Ukraine's Kyiv region. The deceased was identified as Brent Renaud. He had previously worked for the New York Times. The injured journalist, Juan Arredondo, was able to give an account of the attack before being taken into surgery.
We crossed the first bridge in Irpin. We're going to film other refugees leaving, and we got into a car. Somebody offered to take us to the other bridge, and we crossed the checkpoint, and they start shooting at us. So the driver turned around, and they kept shooting. It's two of us. My friend is Brent Renaud, and he's been shot and left behind.
And how is he?
I don't know.
You don't know what happened to him?
I saw him being shot in the neck, and we got split, and I got pulled into the...
And who brought you here?
An ambulance, I don't know.
Ukraine's neighbors report a decrease in the number of refugees as governments and volunteers struggle to find shelter for the nearly 2.5 million people, make that 2.6 million people, that have fled since Russia's invasion over 2 weeks ago. More from this report.
The streets of Ukraine's third largest city, Odessa, were practically deserted on Saturday as the city prepared itself for a possible attack by Russian forces. Anti-tank defenses and sandbags replaced locals and tourists along the city's main thoroughfares. Shops and restaurants were closed, with many people choosing to stay home while others have fled. At the train station, many from the neighboring city of Mykolaiv boarded trains to escape. With the fighting now too close to their home, Mykolaiv resident Alexei Adedera said goodbye to his family through a thick pane of glass. His wife, on the train, tearfully said she hoped this would all end quickly. Stepping off a ferry in Romania, 52-year-old Ukrainian Elena Puchkova fought back tears while describing her shock at what was happening to her country.
They're bombing Kharkov, they're bombing Mykolaiv. It's only 120 kilometers from Odessa, and it's painful inside.
While Ukraine's neighbors reported a dip in numbers of refugees on Saturday, governments and volunteers still struggle to find shelter for the nearly 2.6 million, mostly women and children, who have fled since Russia's invasion 2 weeks ago. Refugees have aimed for cities with established Ukrainian communities and better chances of finding work. Kyiv resident Katerina was sheltering in a makeshift refugee center in Dumbrăveni, Romania.
It's scary, really. And many of my friends are there. And many of my foreign partners who were working in Kyiv, they're also there. I'm sorry, guys.
Fighting raged near Kyiv on Saturday, and Ukrainian officials said heavy shelling and threats of Russian air attacks were endangering attempted evacuations of desperate civilians from encircled towns and cities.
The number of Filipinos repatriated from Ukraine climbs to 225. The latest batch of 52 repatriates arrived in the country Saturday night, while 98 others are awaiting a flight home. The Philippine Foreign Affairs' Undersecretary Sara Lou Ariola says some Filipino seafarers are still stranded in Ukrainian ports due to the conflict. Ariola adds a little over 100 have chosen to remain in Ukraine for work or because they are married to locals. She is appealing to those in Kyiv to evacuate before the fighting reaches the capital.
Doon po talaga yung concentration ng Filipinos sa Kyiv kasi ano po capital siya. So, ang huli po naming alam, around 45 talaga sila yung nandun. Although the train is still running from Kyiv to Lviv, meron po, tinatawagan po sila nung embahada. Pero nandun po talaga yung hesitance. We can only stay as much as we are allowed to stay. Yung konsulado natin sa Kyiv, open pa siya kasi hindi pa po talaga sila nasasakop. Pero kasi ang nagpapatakbo po noon, honorary consul natin na not Ukrainian. Yung presence naman po natin sa Lviv, we will be there until we are allowed to stay. Pero syempre, napaka-volatile po ng situation. No? It's been more than 2 weeks and we are thinking that anything can happen and it can worsen. So, kailangan po talaga na magmadali na po sila kasi pag huminto na po yung train o hindi na yun makaandar, wala na po silang way na makapunta po sa Lviv.
No reprieve for motorists as another massive hike in local pump prices looms this week. Diesel prices may jump by up to 12 pesos per liter, while gasoline may rise by 7 pesos and 20 centavos per liter. Kerosene prices also seem to go up by nearly 10 pesos per liter. The spike reflects last week's skyrocketing prices in the world oil market after global benchmark Brent crude soared to $139 per barrel over fears of supply disruptions following the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. This will mark the 11th round of oil price hikes in the country this year. The Energy Department, meanwhile, cannot say for sure if oil price hikes will continue in the coming weeks.
Napaka-volatile po ng presyuhan sa international market. Kamukha po nung March 8, nung sumipa po siya dahil nga po sa pagbaba ng mga imports ni Russia. But the following day, bumaba din po siya dahil nagkaroon po ng sort ng parang negotiation din naman po yung UAE ambassador sa United States na i-temper, mag-produce na ulit sila ng malaking reduction ng oil para ma-offset man lang yung kawalan ng Russia. Patuloy po yung pag-apilan natin sa ating stakeholders, ang oil companies, na hanggat maaari, patuloy po yung ibigay nilang part ng corporate social responsibility nila, yung mga discount po. At nung nakaraang linggo po, may oil companies na nag-implement ng staggered implementation. At meron din pong oil companies na hindi nag-implement ng kanyang adjustment. So hopefully, makinig po yung ating mga kasama sa industriya para maibsan kahit paano yung bigat na dadarama natin.
A group of local fishermen are set to hold a so-called fishing strike to protest the continuous oil price hikes. Pamalakaya is calling on small fisherfolk and operators of commercial fishing vessels all across the country to join the strike on March 15th. They're also slamming the Duterte administration for allowing giant oil firms to allegedly overprice their goods. Supermarket operators are also meet today to discuss a possible increase in the prices of goods as the higher fuel prices push production and transport costs higher.
Walang gusto magtaas ng presyo ng mga manufacturers, pero yung iba kailangan na talaga magtaas dahil yun na nga, yung cost of oil or gas, no? Gasoline, no? Fuel in their component sa production eh medyo malaki. Pipilita ng mga manufacturers na maghigpit ng kanilang costs, no, of operation, no, pero yun na, yung iba hindi na kaya.
Senator Franklin Dirilon reiterates his call for the Duterte administration to suspend the collection of fuel excise taxes. Dirilon says the train law must be interpreted liberally to help sectors struggling amid soaring oil prices.
Last December, the BIR suspended the continued collection of the VAT, value-added tax, on exporters who were being charged with VAT on purchases on goods for export, materials on goods for export. And the BIR suspended that. Until now, it is suspended. So if there is a will, there is a way. Kung gusto talaga natin, if they want, sigurado talaga, call Congress to a special session and I can assure you that the congressmen and the senators will react favorably. In one day, we can pass a resolution which has the effect of a law to suspend the collection of the excise tax on fuel.
But for Philippine Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno, the government subsidy program for transport workers, farmers, and fisher folk groups is good enough for now.
On the tax cut, I understand that the revenue loss is approximately 100 billion. That's a big sum of money. It means less budgetary allocation for many essential government programs and projects, including spending for education, health, and social welfare. So the beneficiaries of such programs are the biggest losers. The major beneficiaries of the oil tax cut are the rich and the private car owners.
Philippine Senate Minority Leader Franklin Adrilon calls on newly appointed Poll Commissioner Aimee Neri to resign for the good of the country. This, Adrilon says he has serious doubts about the new commissioner's ability to act independently following allegations of bribery by the lawyer of convicted drug lord Herbert Colanco when Neri was still with the Department of Justice.
I have my doubts about her capacity to act independently. Why? You know, no less, there is an extortion charge against her. A daughter of a drug lord said she asked for $10 million to settle the case of the drug lord to be favorably acted upon.
Neri has denied the allegations, while the COMELEC says she is ready to face the issue at the proper forum. I'm sorry, that should have read Commissioner Neri has denied the allegations and that she is ready to face the issue at the proper forum. Former Senator Bongbong Marcos Jr. is the only presidential candidate who has yet to confirm his participation in the debates organized by the Philippine poll body. COMELEC spokesperson James Jimenez says that as of 6 p.m. Sunday, the 9 other aspirants have confirmed their attendance to the debates, which will kick off on March 19th. Earlier in the day, Jimenez said Faisal Mangondato, Jose Montemayor, and Lenny Robredo had verbally pledged to attend the events, though they have yet to provide written commitments. Responding on Twitter, the vice president's spokesman guaranteed that Robredo will be there, adding that their written commitment will be submitted shortly. Marcos had previously said he still doesn't know if he will be joining the debates. Vice President Lenny Robredo will hold more campaign activities in other so-called solid north areas. Senatorial aspirant Teddy Bagilat, who is running under the ticket of the Robredo-Pangilinan tandem, says they were initially hesitant to woo voters in the region, considered the bailiwick of presidential front-runner, at least in surveys, Bongbong Marcos. But he says their camp is more determined to do so now, following a successful sortie in Isabela last Friday.
Binansagan kaming solid north na sumusunod palagi kung Ilocano yung tumatakbo. Pero yun nga, no, napatunayan kagabi, and very, very proud sa aking mga kamag-anak, mga kababayan dyan sa Isabela, dahil nagsidagsahan sila sa rally ni Ma'am Lenny at saka ni Kiko. And in fact, nagbibigay inspirasyon siya sa ating mga kakampings naman sa Baguio City.
In other news, the lawyer of slain Luma teacher Chad Bok points out several holes in the Philippine military's account of how he died. For one, the New People's Army has already denied that Bok and his companions were NPA members, contrary to the claim of the Philippine Armed Forces. Attorney Tony Lavina says it would be in the best interest of the soldiers involved to cooperate with the investigations into the killings.
And he is one of the most red-tagged persons in the Philippines, no? I mean, attacked constantly by the NTFL-CAC. If they're going to stay at the level of propaganda, they will lose. They will lose because, as you know, because these people are clearly not combatants, clearly civilians. They control all the information, yes, but there's a lot of holes in their story.
Yes,
for example, they were saying that the encounter happened on Thursday, the 24th. They released the information that the encounter happened on the 25th. But we know that on the 23rd evening, the five were going back to Davao in the rental vehicle. So how could there be an encounter on the 24th if in the 23rd, these people were already in the highway going back to Davao after the research that they did in New Bataan?
The autopsy done on the body of Bok also telling a different story from the military's claim that Bok was killed during an encounter.
If you're thinking of an encounter wherein, you know, two individuals were shooting at each other, you'd expect for one thing that the shots are frontal. Because you're facing the other person. And so far, that doesn't seem to be the case. Mm. It's so easy to stage a dead body as wearing something, holding something. All these have to be checked. And all these checked with a very objective eye.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, China places one of its biggest cities under lockdown as COVID-19 cases in the country spike. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Russian airstrikes near Ukraine's border with Poland heightens fears of the conflict spilling over to NATO allies. Another oil price hike awaits motorists this week, with diesel expected to go up by as much as 12 pesos per liter. And the Philippines approves the use of Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine for children 6 and above. The Philippine government again falls short of its target during the fourth leg of the national COVID vaccination drive. Authorities aim to inoculate 1.8 million individuals from March 10 to 12, but the health department says only 800,000 were able to get their jabs. Vaccinations for children aged 5 to 11 have also slowed down. The DOH says many individuals have lost their interest to get immunized now that COVID cases in the country have declined. So far, nearly 64 million Filipinos have been fully vaccinated. The Philippine Food and Drug Administration greenlights the use of Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine for children 6 and above. Pharmaceutical consortium IP Biotech says the amended emergency use authorization was based on similar permits given to Sinovac in other countries where the vaccine is being administered to children. So far, Indonesia, Malaysia, and China are using Sinovac for pediatric vaccination. IP Biotech adds the approval is a game changer for the vaccination rollout in the Philippines, where Pfizer is currently the only brand being used for the inoculation of children. The private sector should be given more leeway in implementing their own COVID restrictions if the country shifts to alert level zero. That's according to Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion. He points out business owners are more capable of implementing proper pandemic management 2 years into the health crisis.
Under alert level zero, basically what happens is it will boost confidence, no, that the Philippines has been able to achieve moving away from a pandemic. We support it, no? At nakikita natin naman yung mga ka-asset. Maski na binuksan na natin yung economy, may mga rallies dyan, hindi naman tumataas yung level of infection natin.
China places all 17 million residents in one of its biggest cities under lockdown as daily cases double nationwide to nearly 3,400. The southern tech hub of Shenzhen ordered all residents to stay at home amid struggles to eradicate an Omicron flare-up linked to the neighboring virus-ravaged city of Hong Kong. The lockdown and the suspension of public transport will last until the 20th of March. The surge in infections across China has also prompted authorities to close schools in Shanghai and lock down multiple northeastern cities. Former U.S. President Barack Obama tests positive for COVID-19. Obama revealed his diagnosis on Twitter, adding he is feeling fine except for a scratchy throat. He also says he is grateful that he and his wife Michelle are both vaccinated and boosted. The former First Lady has tested negative for the virus. Well, she's become a familiar face in this pandemic, a voice of reason that strikes through the noise. But Dr. Maricar Limpin is also a survivor, not only of a scathing rebuke from a former spokesperson who injured only himself after losing his temper, but also of the very disease that has sent the world into a tailspin. And yet here she is, still standing, one of the remarkable women we honor this month. Dr. Maricar Limpin. Dr. Limpin, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today. Happy International Women's Month to you. I'm sorry, Dr. Limpin, I can't seem to hear you.
Hello.
There
you go. Can
you
hear me?
Yes, perfect. All right. Yeah. So, what does it mean to be a doctor, a woman doctor during this time of the pandemic?
Well, actually nothing new, no? And nothing different from the male doctors. So we do whatever the men does. And I think the big difference will be on how we take care of the patients and how we take care of the Filipino people. So in our hearts, we have the hearts of a woman, the hearts of a mother, and that makes a lot of difference.
You know, you're one of those who are not afraid to speak out when something needs to be corrected, when something needs to be heard. You're out there. Tell us about what shaped you to be who you are today.
I guess it's my mom, who has also stood up to what is right and has been very vocal through the years. So she really had been my role model as far as any issues are concerned. And, you know, I think growing up in a family where I have been fatherless, meaning to say my dad actually died when I was still very young. So really, I have to learn how to speak up, particularly during difficult times, because it was not really all bed and roses for us, in the family. So we've been through a lot of difficulties.
And tell us about the kind of mothering that you got from your mother, the modeling that happened as you were growing up. Tell us more about that, Dr. Limpin.
My mom, as I said, she has been both the father and mother for all of us. And she has to really work hard to make sure that we are all fed well and that we will all be educated. Depends on what we want. So, and really, my mom has often told
Dr. Limpin.
That is the teachings that I received from her. And if you will not be able to do that for yourself, then the more that other people may not be able to do that, especially the less fortunate ones. So since we are not really very, we don't really belong to the to the rich family. So we really need to strive very hard and work for what we have right now.
And in hindsight, you can now look at that, right? And you can very well pinpoint what your mother did, how that had an impact on you. But when you were seeing this through a child's eyes, what was the effect on you when you were seeing your mother be both father and mother to you?
Well, in my eyes, this is the kind of person that I want to be. And it will be a big disgrace to her if I will not be doing what she has done for the family. So I think that for me is the most important learnings that I have.
And when you took the helm at the Philippine College of Physicians, right in the middle of the COVID crisis, what did that mean to you, Dr. Limpin?
I really have to serve as the role model for my fellow doctors in the Philippine College of Physicians, since we are the ones who are really, who really have to take care of the patients. And if I will not be able to speak for what is right, if I will not be able to speak in behalf of my colleagues, then I think that we will really be in a big mess, considering that I am here in this position where I have the opportunity to create more impact, in healthcare. So I think for me, that is one of the defining moment of my life, to make sure that all my healthcare workers will actually have a voice. I cannot actually do anything less than what is expected of me.
And the kind of pressure that that puts you in, I mean, here I am talking to you as the president of the Philippine College of Physicians. But we all know that you're still a practicing doctor and you also have a family to take care of. How do you divide the time and how is that, how does that fuel you that you have many roles to play in this one single lifetime?
I guess I grew up really doing a lot of roles, no? Performing a lot of roles. And doing this is something that I believe that I should really be doing. And that's not really created, you know, a lot of difficulty for me. I think I am quite fortunate because I have a family that understands me. I have a husband who is very supportive, and my children, they have also been very supportive, and they believe in what I do. And I think the support and the belief of my family is one of the greatest driving force for me. And to put them down, if I do anything less, it's like putting them down. Mm-hmm. So I cannot actually do that. I have to live up to the expectations also of my family and also of the my colleagues in the Philippine College of Physicians.
I remember, Dr. Limpin, I remember talking to you after the incident with former presidential spokesperson Harry Roque, and I was talking to you and I saw a woman who was really unfazed. To what or whom would you attribute this strength of yours?
I've been like that ever since. I can remember, no? But I am not as talkative as I am right now because during my childhood, I'm more of an introvert. But, I think it is really the needs of the time that make me do whatever I am doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I feel and I believe that I need to rise up to the occasion. If not, then... it will really be a great disgrace, no, to the healthcare system if if I am not going to do what is expected of me, particularly what is expected of my position. So I think that carrying the position of being the president of PCP carries a lot of responsibilities, and I have to respond to that responsibility.
But the strength that we see in you now, Dr. Limpin, that can only take you so far, especially here in the middle of the pandemic. Was there also a point when you felt vulnerable? Tell us about that time when you were beginning to lose colleagues left and right to this terrible disease. How did that affect you?
So actually, I had some kind of a depression, particularly during the first few months of the pandemic, because I've been taking care of my colleagues who also died, and I have to actually get out of the scene, no? Mm-hmm. I have to ask my colleague to take over because I felt so depressed. So, but that took only about, a few weeks. I have to talk to a psychiatrist in order to, to get back to my old self. So after talking to the psychiatrist, then I was able to, bounce back and get up to what I need to do.
And how important is it that a person recognizes the need to step back, especially in your kind of profession now during this COVID crisis? Because I can just imagine that yours is not a unique situation.
Yes, we need to be able to identify the people who can step up for us, no? I'm very fortunate that I have a friend who immediately said, "Yes, Maricar, I'm going to take care of the patient, your patients, while you are still, recuperating from the setbacks. You know, the setback is actually the death, no, of my colleagues. And she stepped up, and after about, I think about a week, I was able to, you know, realize that I need to go back, because if I don't go back, then this person, my friend, might also suffer the same situation that I got in. So we need to have, you know, some kind of a buddy system, so that that will actually keep us from falling down. So to keep us from getting on with what we need to do.
Would you also say, Dr. Limpin, that now looking back, as the disease ravaged your profession, that it also made your sector, your family, and in the medical profession, stronger than ever?
Yes, you are correct. That made us actually stronger. And now, actually, you know, us in the medical professions, whatever field you may be in, we are really fighting now as one. We talk to each other more frequently right now. And we can actually agree, no, on a lot of things. And this is primarily brought about by the need of the times, that we need to get together, to get our acts together, so that, you know, the healthcare system will not collapse. Mm.
Still, many of your colleagues have decided to leave the country for one reason or another, right? But was this also something that you thought about?
Leaving the country? Right? No. At this particular time, no.
Earlier in your career, maybe?
In my career, no. That never really crossed my mind. In fact, even before, you know, when there were so many of us going out of the country for a greener pasture, I had this resolve that I need to stay in the Philippines because my country needs me, and this is where I belong. I do not want to serve other, you know, other people in other countries. I want to serve our people because this is where I am needed. I am not needed in the other countries. I am needed here in the Philippines.
And especially now that we're in the middle of the pandemic. But I want to ask you, Dr. Limpin, how has this pandemic changed you?
Yeah, This actually made me stronger. Definitely, I can say that. It has made me stronger. And the more that I have seen the problems, no, in the healthcare system, and the more that I want to do more than what I have been doing right now. So I think that even if I have my end, that my term ends in the Philippine College of Physicians, you will still see me, because I want my voice to be heard still. I don't know how to do it, but I think that, you know, social media is a very powerful tool, and I want to, you know, be able to contribute on the changes and in improving our healthcare system.
And talking about the healthcare system, Dr. Limpin, what do you think is the future of the Philippine healthcare system post this pandemic? Is it clear to you now?
No, I'm sorry to say, but it is still not clear. Right now, we're supposed to be implementing already the universal health care, but we know that it is still, the implementation is still not clear for all of us. No, even I think even for the Department of Health, it's not really very clear. And that is why I'm saying that I need to still be the voice of the health of us in the medical profession. Even if I am no longer the president, so I still want to be able to, you know, give a voice to many of the healthcare providers, so that we will be able to really have a good healthcare system, a healthcare system that is responsive to the needs of the people. So we need that. And I believe that it is only when we are able to voice out our opinions and our positions that we will be able to go to the right direction.
And that right direction is really future-proofing the healthcare system. So if you talk about that, what's that one thing that can be done now that will bring us towards that, a future-proof healthcare system, Dr. Lim Pin?
Oh, I think number one will be finding the right financial support, no, or the finance, the health finance management, no, for the country, because right now the healthcare system cannot be afforded by many of our countrymen, and most of the time we still have to shell out, no, from our individual pockets. And I believe that if we continue to be doing that, then we will have no future as far as the healthcare system is concerned. So very important is the health financing. So we have to make sure that we are able to have very good health financing system, and that can be done through PhilHealth. But there are still so many things that can be done to help the Philippine health insurance system. So one of the things that needs to be done is maybe restructuring of our PhilHealth. That is something that we probably need to work for our people.
And finally, Dr. Lim Pin, what is your hope for the many women doctors who will still come after you?
My hope for the many women doctors will be for them to really fight, no, for what is right, for them to continue to voice their opinions, their stand, particularly if it is for the best interest of the Filipino people. So women should not be afraid to voice out our position. We are just equally good, and our voice should actually be heard, no, equally to that of men's voice.
Dr. Maricar Lim Pin, President of the Philippine College of Physicians, one of the remarkable women we honor this month. Thank you for being with us today. You take care and keep safe.
Thank you very much.
And from there, we're going to take a break. Now, still ahead, a UK government official urges British companies to exit Russia. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're still on Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back to more election news now. Action Democratico Standard Bearer Manila Mayor Isko Moreno now in Sorsogon as he continues to tour the Bicol region. Our very own Bianca Dava now joins us with the latest from there. Bianca, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Over a month since the start of the official campaign, presidential candidate Mayor Isko Moreno Domagoso entered Bicol, the regional bailiwick of Vice President Lenny Robredo, who is also running for the highest government post. Day two of Action Democratico's three-day campaign sortie in Bicol brings Domagoso and his entire slate to Sorsogon. The candidates began their day with a motorcade around Sorsogon City, where they were warmly greeted by residents and supporters who waited along the route of the caravan despite the rain. Residents carried posters, balloons, and placards to show their support for the candidates. Domagoso and his slate held a campaign event at the Sorsogon Provincial Gymnasium. Now, this event was supposed to be held at the Sorsogon Capitol Park, but was transferred due to light to moderate rains. The moment he arrived at the venue, Domagoso greeted his supporters with his two-joint stand sign, which seems to have become more popular than his God-first gesture. The Manila mayor courted the crowd, saying he is no different from Bicolanos. Domagoso explained, in politics, he is proud to lead the Action Democratico Party, which was founded by the late Senator and Nagenyo Raul Roco. He also recognized the presence of Roco's son, Bo, who joined them in the campaign event. On a more personal note, Domagoso added he is related to a Bicolana, referring to his wife, Daini Ditan Domagoso, who hails from Sorsogon. The presidential bet asked voters to adopt him and give him a few votes because he knows of the popularity of a Bicolana candidate, obviously referring to Robredo. Yesterday, Carmina, Action Democratico candidates kicked off the Bicol leg of their campaign in Masbate. They held a dialogue with local leaders and residents in Kawayan, Placer, and Aroroy towns. Tomorrow, the candidates will campaign and hold a motorcade and town hall meeting in Albay. Bicol region has around 3.9 million voters. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Bianca Dava there joining us on the line. Take care, Bianca. Keep safe. Over now in business, the UK's finance minister calls on more British companies to cut ties with Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Minister Rishi Sunak says firms that wind down existing investments in Moscow will have the government's backing. So far, several major British firms have announced a reduction of their interests in Russia, such as power giants BP, Shell and investment firm Aviva.
Until recently, the UK companies held tens of billions of pounds of investments in Russian assets. While I recognise that it may be challenging to wind down existing investments, I believe there is no argument for new investment in the Russian economy. I am urging asset owners and managers to think very carefully about any investments that would in any sense support Putin and his regime. As the Prime Minister has said, diplomatically, politically, economically, and eventually militarily, this hideous and barbaric venture of Vladimir Putin must end in failure.
In entertainment news, an action thriller and a new Pixar animated film are among the latest offerings from Hollywood. Here's Manny, the movie guy's take on Gold and Turning Red.
I'm supposed to meet a man here to take me to the compound.
In Gold, Zac Efron stars in this Australian survival thriller as a drifter looking for work at the compound. Helping him get there is an unnamed driver played by writer-director Anthony Hayes.
That's gold.
We just found a pile of gold!
That's the gold of the title, a source of greed in this dystopian near-future tale. Efron is impressive here, evolving from his Disney Channel days and polishing his serious actor credentials, while Hayes directs this minimalist tale as a canvas for emptiness. If you're looking for a film with a Hollywood flair, look somewhere else. Gold is more interested in examining human frailties. So discover this gold and witness Efron's intensity. And for that, Gold gets 3 out of 4 24-karat kisses. And only in theaters in the Philippines, Pixar's Turning Red.
I'm Maylin Lee. I wear what I want.
Meet Maylin Lee, a 13-year-old Chinese-Canadian girl with one big problem. She turns into a giant red panda when she gets too excited or stressed. While Turning Red celebrates its progressive victories, director Domi Shi is the first woman to direct a Pixar movie. This is the first Pixar film featuring an Asian female character and the first with an all-woman team. Turning Red is anything but preachy. It's funny and charming and has a lot to say about loving oneself. Like Inside Out, Turning Red smartly mixes allegories of puberty and adolescent sexuality with a heartwarming tale about finding your truth. The characters are well developed and the story has a strong emotional core. Turning Red is brilliant and one of Pixar's best. So celebrate your inner teenager and turn red. And for that, Turning Red gets 3.5 out of 4 giant red panda kisses. I'm Manny the Movie Guy for ANC.
And before we go, Vietnam has banned Sony's action movie Uncharted from domestic distribution. This over a scene featuring a map that shows China's disputed claim over large parts of the South China Sea. The nine-dash line is used on Chinese maps to illustrate its claims over the resource-rich area. It includes swaths of what Vietnam regards as its continental shelf, where it has awarded oil concessions. Uncharted, which is based on a video game about treasure hunting, stars Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. It was due to hit Vietnam cinemas on March 18th. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.